Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Lynn Curry. I'm a member of Prairie and sometimes occasionally step up here to preside. Prairie aspires to be an open-hearted and open-minded congregation. We welcome everyone, regardless of your ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, sexual orientation, gender, family structure. We welcome you no matter what age you are, what your abilities are. Every Sunday morning is a little bit different at Prairie. Sometimes our minister, Sandy Ingham, speaks, sometimes members of Prairie speak, and as is the case today, members of the broader community come in and present to us. And actually today, I know our speaker is Tammy Fleming. There we go. And it's going to be, oh great, the Friends of State Street family. I could have looked at that ahead of time, but there we go. So I'm looking forward to hearing about Tammy, what Tammy has to say. Our opening words are by Frederick Gillis. Spirit of community, in which we share and find strength and common purpose, we turn our minds and hearts toward one another, seeking to bring into our circle of concern all who need our love and support, those who are ill, those who are in pain, either in body or in spirit, those who are lonely, those who have been wronged. We are part of a web of life that makes us one with all humanity, one with all the universe. We are grateful for the miracle of consciousness that we share, the consciousness that gives us the power to remember, to love, to care. Please welcome now Bella Gessler to light our chalice candle and read our chalice lighting.
To live content with small means, to seek elegance rather than luxury, and refinement rather than fashion, to be worthy not respectable, and wealthy not rich, to study hard, think hardly, talk gently, act frankly, to listen to stars and birds, to babes and stage with open heart, to bear all cheerfully, do all bravely, await occasions, hurry never, to let the spiritual
unbidden
and
unconscious
grow up through the common. This is to be my sympathy.
And now I'd like to welcome up Faith Cholven, who is going to introduce our speaker for today.
I'm not going to say too much. I'm going to let Tammy introduce herself, but I'd just like to say it's been my great honor to get to know Tammy Fleming, who is the founder and originator of Friends of State Street Family. I just have gotten to know her, and it's been my privilege to get to know kind of what they do. I've gone out with them several times on their rounds and gotten to know some of the people they serve, and it's been such an honor to see the good work they do. And I think what they do is so good. And they do it as volunteers. And they've been doing it for 6 years as volunteers. And what they do is not only save people from freezing and give food and blankets and socks and hygiene products to homeless people, but they also build relationships with homeless people. And I just think no other work is so important here in Madison. But I'll welcome her up to talk about her project. Tammy Fleming.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. As Faith said, we've been doing this for about 6 years, and it started when I was volunteering at St. Mary's in the emergency room, and a woman came in who was very ill and elderly and alone, and I got to meet her and sat with her for a while as part of my job as a volunteer there, and she was in great distress. And I didn't even think she knew I was in the room with her. The police brought her in. She had restraints. And I noticed that as she was screaming out there were tears going down the side of her face, and she was so dirty you could see the little tracks they were making, and she just broke my heart. And I just thought, how can we in Madison have people who are living like this? She was homeless. And I just thought of my own mother, and if, you know, she had been ill, and if so, no one was there to take care of her, you know, how that would make me feel. And and she looked at me and turned to me all of a sudden and said, "You've got to help me. Got to tell God to help me. I can't take this no more." And that for me was a spiritual swift kick to the head. You know, it's time to do something. I was looking for a purpose, and that's why I was volunteering there, and I found it. So after that, I connected with some people online and tried to find where I could help, or I could be the most useful. What part of this population is underserved? And we started a Facebook page. And everyone kept saying, let's go out and make food and we'll bring it. And I wasn't able to do the first couple ones they said, and they always backed out at the last minute. And I was finally able to do one on a Saturday. And I baked 13 dozen cookies, because that's what I signed up to do. And everybody backed out at the last minute, but I'm half stubborn Norwegian, so I just loaded those cookies up and made sandwiches and got some fruit and filled a bunch of bags and decided to walk up and down State Street till I found somebody who was hungry. And that's how Friends of State Street started. And I met some really lovely people at the top of State Street, and they told me their stories, and I still remember their faces. And they're not so much different from the people we know. They're just, so many of us are just a few paychecks away from being displaced. And a lot of people that we see in Madison that are homeless are just that. The average age of a homeless person in Madison is 9 years old. So there are a lot of children, over 1,500 children in the Madison schools last year were homeless. And then there are children younger than school age. And then the adults. So it's a big group of people we're talking about that are suffering. They're alone. And so as Friends of State Street got going, I think I mentioned that we went out on a Saturday, and I talked to the folks there, and every Saturday after that, we've always provided a meal to up to 200 people on the street. From 3 to 4 o'clock. If you're ever downtown at that time, you're welcome to come and hang out with us. We like to make it like a family meal. It's right behind the Wisconsin State Historical Museum, outside, rain or shine or snow, because that's where the people are, and it's where people are already feel comfortable. It's like a home visit, and we go to them, and that's what we also do with outreach. We have 5 teams that go out Monday through Friday night, and our teams go out and bring survival gear, food. We have medical professionals that come out with us and do triage and check on people, and we focus that energy on people who are outside, sleeping outside. And there's a lot, not just downtown, but all over the city, living under bridges, in tent villages, hidden, just about anywhere. If you open your eyes to it, you'll see them quite a bit. I know I've heard that there's some, we have a couple that was living in front of the city county building last year when they were all forced out, and they happened to be finally housed, and they're housed in this neighborhood, and they're telling me that they see some folks under bridges sometimes, and they're trying to reach out and get our groups to come out, and we're going to have an outreach team that's placed out here as well. But last year, our volunteers, I got my little statistics here because people were a little bit dubious about what volunteers could do at first. Besides, one thing that we heard a lot was you're just enabling homelessness, which makes no sense, but we were able to get 52 people. I'm sorry, I'm trying to get my little stats here. I can't remember the hours. 52 people housed with no money from the city or county and with only volunteers. So by going out to the people with the highest needs, the people who are not comfortable walking in to social services and asking for help, or people who are too stubborn or too proud or too sick or not ambulatory, we were able to connect them with services and make the services come out to them with us once we developed relationship and trust. So they see us 5 nights a week, and they see us on Saturdays for food, and now they start trusting us. We become their family, and we encourage them. We go visit them in the hospital. We go visit them when they're ready to get help. We have people who help them get clean and sober. We put them up in sober living for the first couple months. We do whatever we can to encourage folks to move forward in life when they're ready. But we also try to respect their differences and respect how they want to live in a way that is still safe, you know, and just encourage them to make good choices. Last year, our groups also fed 9,700 individual meals. And our volunteers did 2,764 hours of volunteer work, just focusing on homeless individuals. And I'm so proud of the people that volunteer alongside me. They are some of the most beautiful people you ever want to meet. And the people that we talk to on the street are also very, very beautiful, touching human beings. And part of what we do also is advocate for them. You may see some initiatives sometimes by the city or county that seem a little, for lack of a better word, ridiculous. like the bench ordinance that was proposed, or the sleeping ordinance. So when those things are brought forth, we go and talk to all the committees. We go and testify. We stand up for the people who have, you know, who don't have a voice, and we bring people in who will bring people off the street who do speak well for their situation, and get them to, you know, speak the truth to power. And one thing I love about this church is that your philosophy is very much like ours. We have groups that come in and serve food with us from every belief, every walk of life, Buddhist, Baha'i, Baptists, small churches from small towns and large churches, the youth groups come. We have veterans groups. We have formerly homeless people who come and serve. And we welcome everyone with open arms. And it's all about more faces showing people that they're cared about. You know, they're not alone, and we're here for you. There's one project and initiative that I'm here specifically to talk to you about today, and that's the Keys to Dignity program. And it's a locker program, and it took us a year and a half to get the ordinances passed to allow this. But it's to place 3 to 6 lockers outside of buildings, churches, nonprofits, or city or county buildings that they allow us to do. And those lockers are for homeless individuals. And those lockers we developed a whole program around them. You know, I'm not seeing what you're seeing, so I'm going to stand up in front a little bit.
Just take a minute.
Oh, okay.
Objection. get it warm enough.
Yeah, it's got to warm enough.
Well, I'll just tell you a little bit about who those lockers are going to serve.
If you go to the next slide. So
that's not ours.
Okay. Here's some of the folks that these lockers would serve, and here's why. The gentleman up here at the top, we're going to call him Will, that's not his name, but he's with Savannah, one of our outreach people. She's amazing, loving, caring person. And the first time I met him, he was shaking so badly he could hardly walk, hardly carry his food. He was at a food run, and I went to carry his food for him. And we found out that he has MS, and he was sleeping outside. And he was going to as many medical appointments as he could, but he also needed to inject IV drugs every night, and they needed to be refrigerated, and there was no refrigerator for him to keep them. And Savannah and another woman that does outreach with us, Beth, fought hard to advocate for him to get to the top of the housing first list, and he's going to be housed shortly. But this is one guy who was a sweetheart, who was just the sweetest man you wanted to meet. And because of his multiple sclerosis, he would forget where he would put things. He would lose his things. People would steal his medication. You know, if he had a place to lock that up and keep it safe, you know, he would have been much better off. There are so many times we had to go back to the doctor and beg for help for more things. And this young man in the middle, we'll call him Ryan, and this is when he was in school, and he's now living on the street. One of my outreach director is a high school teacher from Mount Horeb, and she was his teacher. And she saw him on the street, and another, our Tuesday night boys, there's two college guys who are just lovely people, and they lead an outreach team, and one of them went to school with him. And having a locker in one place helps us locate that person again. You know, they have a place that kind of anchors them to a space instead of just drifting all over, and then we lose track of where they are. And especially people who are super vulnerable, like a small young man. And then this gentleman here, you can see he's got a boot on his foot, he's got a walking stick, and his head is bandaged. He had fallen and hit his head on the pavement, and the police had just bandaged him up, and I've known him for 6 years. He's a very sweet man. He's downtown, and how is he supposed to carry everything he owns around with him while he can barely ambulate? You know, these are the people that we're talking about here, that we really want to serve. And if you go to the next slide, we need to find 10 to 15 sites willing to let us put up 3 to 6 lockers. Now, because people who are homeless live all over the city, it's a legitimate thing to put them all over the city in different places. The thing that I think really sets our idea apart is that Sector 67, I don't know if many of you know the artists and engineers that have the collaborative space downtown on Winnebago Street, they are going to re-engineer these lockers, so they're up off the ground. They're going to place them with the site's permission where they want them, and then they're going to urban camouflage them so they totally match the building they're up against, so that they're not obvious, they don't stick out. They'll also have like a solar light inside, so if they open it at night, the light will come on, and they'll be able to see what they're doing. Could you go to the next one? Besides getting the locker, we're giving them all sorts of things to kind of help them be more able to move around. So we've got these city packs, and every single person will get a city pack who has a locker also in that. So their locker will be for their sleep gear and their day-to-day things that they don't need to have with them all the time. And then the city pack, they can carry the things they need with them all the time. Next. So we have new lockers. The county has agreed to pay for lockers. And they actually wanted to just buy lockers and put them all up in a parking garage. But I thought, why do it that way when we can actually register these lockers to individuals? They keep the same locker for at least 6 months,
And then we can get social workers to case manage and get them off the street faster. Because this locker serves as an anchor, like I said before, to kind of keep that person coming back to the same spot so we're able to check in with them and monitor them. And everyone who gets a locker and registers for locker, we have them fill out the Housing First questionnaire. So as soon as they register for this program, they're on the Housing First list. And Housing First is for chronically homeless people. The city has already housed quite a few people that we've worked with for years and years, and it's just been a wonderful program. And then what our group's doing is that our outreach teams that go out every weeknight and on Saturday, our food run team, are going to go by and physically look at the properties where our lockers are every night or every day on their route, just to make sure things are kept maintained, that they're clean, that no one's sleeping on the property, and that is one of the things that people agree to and sign when they sign their agreement, that they won't do that and they'll help keep it clean. And then we'll have a number that sends voice to text to four different volunteers, and the first person who can respond will respond to come over and handle whatever issue may arise. If you could go to the next one. We also hope to, we're still working with the post office on this, but we're hoping to have them be able to use it as a registered mailbox. Which is a big deal when you're putting your name on resume, or when you're putting your name on job applications, and everybody knows if you use the job center or one of the shelters as your mailing address that you're homeless, and that, you know, really cuts your chances of being able to get a job. We can also have the social worker can also leave it, but you know, information there that's important for them. Say your number is coming up on the Housing First list. You need to call me. Here's my number, or email me. So that's like I said, a way to contact these folks. Next. The other thing is you might notice some people have a lot of stuff that they keep with them, sometimes a lot too much. And so we've worked with Sanctuary Storage, which is at Social Justice Center, where we have a little office. It's on Willie Street, and we'll buy more of these big Rubbermaid storage things for their seasonal things. It's really hard when people have very little left to ask them to give that up. But it also, if they don't give it up, they're stuck watching their stuff all day in one spot, and they never can go look for a job. They can never go and get out into society and participate. So it's important to give them a safe place for those things. And if you go to the next slide. Also, there are people sometimes who keep things that are not practical, like an electric fan or a television set or a microwave. And you know, they feel like it's of value, and they know someday I'm going to get into housing and I want to have this for them. But what we're doing is we're encouraging them, if it's working, to donate it, and if it's not, to throw it out. And we'll do that in a very gentle and caring way. But what we'll do is promise to get them that same item when they get housed. So we'll make them our own little voucher for those items that we'll buy, you know, we'll get them from St. Vinny's or whatever, a very light item. So they don't feel like they're giving that up for good. They'll get it back when they're ready and when they're in housing. Next one. We also hope to do city bus passes and free and bicycles. Like I said, when you have a lot of stuff and you have nowhere to put it, you're kind of stuck sitting there in that spot babysitting your stuff all day, or it gets stolen or confiscated. So once these things are put away and all you have is a backpack to carry around, you can bike where you want to go, or you can take if a bicycle is not realistic for your abilities, then a bus pass, which we'll provide. Go ahead. And then we are numbering everything the same because things are very difficult. You know, with a lot of people, when they're living outside, it's very traumatic. People, a lot of bad things happen to our friends who live outside. And I don't want to go into detail, but we make it as easy for people to remember all their number. So everything's numbered the same. And if somebody loses their backpack, it's register to that number, and we have all their contact information. So the police department can call us, and we'll get it back to the person. You know, if they lose their key, we can help. Well, we have master keys to let them in and rekey. And we're just going to rekey it as many times as we need to do it, because we understand that this is the population we're working with, and we care about them, and we're going to do the best we can to support them any way we can. Go ahead. We have our site hosts for instance, each site, if your site decided to have like 3 to 6 lockers here, there would be a person assigned to it, like Cal would be assigned to this site, and he would be your go-to guy. If anything was a problem, he'd also know every single person by name and face and have a relationship with those people and get them connected with the services that are appropriate. So by getting to know these folks, you know, the longer you spend with people, you understand maybe there's an addiction issue here. Maybe there is an untreated mental illness. Maybe there are physical disabilities, and you should be getting Social Security for this because you can't work with this disability. You know, and so getting to know that person and being that that family member that they don't have anymore, come alongside them, really helps kind of steer them to the right services and get them to the Social Security office and take them to their appointments. And so that site host is a key person to, you know, facilitate this person moving forward in life. Go ahead. I didn't realize that was on there, I'm sorry. Oh, the other thing is with the thing that's called the VSPDAT, that's the Housing First questionnaire, the Housing First interview. The thing is, the Housing First interviews were done when they first decided to do the program, and that was a year and a half ago. Well, if you've been living outside for a year and a half, and you already have problems, health problems, those things can change. Those problems can really escalate over time. Or you might have lost a partner, and you don't have that stability and that safety anymore of having someone to be with you. So being able to kind of have these ongoing relationships with people who are on the Housing First list allows us to update their status and move them up higher on the list based on need. The way the Housing First list works is the more need you have, the more likely it is that you may die outside, the higher you are on the top, on the list. So we try and make sure that doesn't happen by having relationships with folks. Well, that's a lot of words up on one screen, but it's just, again, it's a really great way to keep track of folks. And the questionnaire that we developed together with and had put through the city attorney's office, and they approved it. We had Heidi Wegleitner, who's a county supervisor and also a poverty lawyer, okay it too. Brenda Conkle okayed it. Made sure that it was fair to the folks. It's agreement that they signed. An agreement, we're asking them to give us not only their contact information, but if we can't find you in 6 months, who can we release your things to? What do you want us to do with them? So they're not, if someone goes to jail, or if someone decides to go and work out of state, or if someone passes away, they're not just gonna be sitting there, their things aren't gonna sit there forever. But also it gives us this background information on a person that we typically, all we know is a street name, not even a real name. You know, so we'll have all this information, and they'll give it to us because they want the locker, because they know it's a really great opportunity. So that just that questionnaire alone is going to be such a help for us to help these folks move forward in life. And maybe they have family looking for them. I have people call me every year. There's at least a handful of people who are looking for an adult son or daughter who has untreated mental illness, or who is an addict and they haven't seen for a long time. The last heard they were in the Madison area, and we help them as much as we can. But having that real information, it's not just a street name. I mean, people's appearance can really change if they're in a bad place. So if we have that, it really helps us connect them with folks that are looking for them too. Do you folks have any questions? This kind of threw a lot at you.
Well, like I said, the city attorney's office approved our agreement, that we're signing with people, and we do have permission to go in if the police have a reasonable concern or the site host. We will contact them and ask them to go into the locker with us if we're able to contact them, but we do have permission to go in. It's kind of like owning a school locker, and they're using it, but they don't own it. So they're agreeing to allow that to happen when they sign, and it's spelled out there. Well, we haven't placed any yet, so we're looking for our first site. The Social Justice Center agreed to be our first site. Brenda over there works with us quite a bit, and so we'll have 3 to 6 lockers there shortly. But you know, they're signing that they understand that that could be a possibility if they break the rules that we ask them to do. And the rules that we're asking them for are not unreasonable. We're asking them not to sleep on property. We're asking them to not have anything illicit in their locker. They have to keep their locker locked at all times because we don't want someone just putting things in there. They're responsible for what's in their lockers. And we're asking them to help keep the site clean. So I think those are reasonable. And we had actually homeless individuals participate on our committee to come up with the agreement. And they felt that those were reasonable requests as well. First we had to get the ordinance written and passed, and that took a year and a half. So that just got passed, 3 months ago? And it's hard to convince folks to be the first, you know? But the thing is, we're selecting the people who are going to be in the lockers, and we obviously want them to be set up to be successful. You know, and we want the site to feel comfortable. And we also are agreeing to allow, like for instance, the Salvation Army is considering it, but for them, we're just gonna place single women have single women be in their lockers because they don't want men coming onto the property at all hours because they wanna keep the women who are staying in the shelter safe. And that is absolutely reasonable. And so if you have a target population that your congregation is really, really cares about and really wants to kind of maybe nurture a relationship with some of the folks that might be here, if that's something that's would be meaningful to you, you can let us know. You know, we prefer veterans. Or if there are youth, you know, unaccompanied youth, 14 to 18-year-olds out there, we would love to have them have a locker here. I know James Reeb Church had talked about that since they're so close to East High, and that's absolutely reasonable. There are people from all ages and all walks of life who need lockers, and I don't think that there's anything wrong with kind of picking your demographic at this point. It's a new thing, and we want everyone to have a good experience. There are people in every neighborhood. Yeah, obviously they can't keep those in there, and that's on our list. If you go forward, I think there's a copy of the, I don't know if that's big, can you read that? No. Too small. Well, I can give you, we can have that, make sure you guys have paper copies so you can see exactly what people are agreeing to. And I do want to also, before I forget, invite you folks, if you do have a heart for homeless individuals, we have a lot of opportunities to volunteer. And that doesn't cost you anything but time and love. My husband Cal right there has little half sheets. If you're interested in just hearing about opportunities, you can sign up and I'll send you an email and let you know what those are. And you can check on there what you might be interested in. Some are just one day events to raise money for the Homeless Day Center. And some are like a regular volunteering opportunity, like for 4 hours a week, every week, when the Homeless Day Center opens downtown after October 1st. So we need about 170 shifts per week, because it's 7 days a week. So I am shamelessly asking you now for help. Yes. I was just hired I finally don't have to work in the private sector, and I get to work where my heart and passion is and help train and recruit volunteers to help with our homeless community in Madison, which I've been doing for free for 6 years. So if you get to do what, and if you get to make a living doing what you would do for free, that's pretty great. We have a really good relationship with the State Street officers, and was talking about the top of State Street and how there's some fear about some of the folks that are up there. But she pointed out to me that the people who are causing, who are the ones that are scary, are actually not homeless, and they're preying off of some of the homeless individuals. So the people who are legitimately homeless are extremely kind, humble, appreciative of people talking to you, unless they have a very unless they have a mental illness that makes them paranoid or afraid or protective of themselves. And you can pretty much read that when you approach someone. You know, their body language will tell you to not bother them. But the majority of people are just so appreciative of being treated like a human being. I remember when we first started doing food on State Street, I ran into an elderly African-American gentleman, and I shook his hand, and I introduced myself and smiled at him, and he started to weep. And he said, "Thank you for seeing me." Yeah. And since then, I started hugging everybody that let me hug him, because I think people just need to be touched and acknowledged as human beings. And so many of us, or so many people, are trained to look past them because it's uncomfortable. But in terms of giving to people who are flying a sign, I mean, I do know that there are legitimately people who that's their sole source of food and income. But if you're not comfortable with it, don't do it. The thing is, if someone misuses your gift that you give with an open heart, that's not on you. You know, and if you're just giving them a dollar or two, that's not enough to hurt themselves. But you can also just carry with you baggies of essentials. You know, if you go stay at hotels a lot, keep those travel size things in a Ziploc baggie. You can hand those out with the dollar. I mean, that's not going to hurt anybody, and it's not going to hurt you financially either. And you should feel good about it because it's a practical thing. Just anything that you give, if you give with the right spirit and the right heart, you know, I really think that makes a big difference. Well, we've grown very organically, but in the last year, we've really had a lot of people step up. And actually, it was facilitated by me being sick. last year, I had breast cancer, and I'm fine now. But it turned out to be a blessing, because we had so many people that just stepped forward into leadership roles that were hesitant before. And wow, it's taken off. It's really taken off. So we're going to do our first fundraiser August 26th, but we've never had to really do a fundraiser, because God's always provided. I mean, we don't proselytize at all, ever, unless someone asks us to pray with them and it's initiated by them. We never force anything on people, because we respect their own beliefs and where they're coming from. But a lot of us have a very strong faith, and it's personal, and the right things always show up when we need them for the people, and the right people always show up when we need them. So we've been able to grow a lot. We have a board of directors now, and we do have, we actually have a budget. So it's been pretty cool to see that evolve. Sure. Well, mainly it's asking people for personal contact information and who we can contact if we can't find them. But the rules are basically: keep it clean, keep your locker locked, don't sleep on the property, and don't put anything illegal in there. So those are four basic things. And we could probably, I mean, since we haven't had them sighted yet at anywhere, we could probably put a laminated card tacked to the inside of each locker just to remind them, here's the rules, guys. You know, we care about you, we want you to be successful, let's not forget what we agreed to. It's also why we're only doing 3 to 6 at each site. It's a small and manageable group at a time. You know, it's not 100 on one spot. There's no way you can help 100 people at once. But 3 to 6 people at once, yes, that's manageable. Well, thank you so much again.
Our closing words today are from James 2. Faith cannot save. Oh, and Faith is going to read.
Okay. What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if you If you say you have faith but do not have works, can faith save you?
If a brother or sister is naked and asks daily food, and one of you says to them,
go in peace, keep warm, and eat your fill,
and yet you do not supply their bodily needs, what is the good of that?
So faith by itself, if it has no works, is dead.
Show me your faith apart from your works, and I, by my works, will show you my faith.
Amen.
Thanks, everybody, for coming today. Please be sure to say hi to folks, extend the hand of friendship, enjoy some coffee and conversation, and stop in for some goodies before you leave. So, yep. So, have a wonderful day.